CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, and what a morning it is. The sun is shining, the birds are tweeting, the jacarandas are,
the birds are tweeting.
Glistening. What?
Tweeting.
That's what birds do, don't they, for me?
Chirp.
Well, I don't
tweeting
know.
Tweeting is that other thing on that other app.
Last time I went past a bird, I'm pretty sure it was tweet, 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 not chirp, chirp, chirp.
When was that, Ben?
This morning, Google, morning.
Well, your birds don't sleep. Mine are asleep at 5 a.m.
Because I don't think birds have really, like, sort of prominent tongues in their mouth structure. Because chirp is more of a tongue kind of sound. Tweet is more from the mouth.
You guys.
Oh, gosh.
This is nature.
And it's going to be a long morning. Good morning, Ben.
This is Tuesday. Put me on my left. We've got Flax towards my front.
How's it?
Where I like it. And then Gugu's here as well.
What up, Ben?
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. Gugu just showed me a picture of him scything through traffic on his motorbike.
A video.
Are you not scared to ride that motorbike?
Are you scared?
I would. Yes, I'd have anxiety.
Kugu looks like Paul Walker back when Paul Walker was still around.
Shut up, Ben. Don't know what that means.
So, yes, wow. So that bike you see out front, that is Gugu's chariot. It's his wheels for the moment. And he's even got like a Suzuki buff on.
I had to pull out the appropriate buffer, Ben. I got a couple. I got a BMW. I got a Suzuki. I got so many of them.
So, Gugu, something I find interesting about the show is obviously that you've become more of a feature, which is good because, you know, the show is, I wouldn't say it's in flux, but it's a very fluid movement from people. Right. You know, obviously, there's a team that started, and then there was people that came and went. And Flux is a prime example of that. It's great to have him back here. Pumi's like, you've been with Cliff Central for a few years now. You've intertwined yourself through your own show into this show. And then there were like regulars like me, my buddy, that we've gone. Mm-hmm. And then there's now you. But what's your primary thing is motor journalism, right?
Yeah, that's my career. Yeah.
But like, do you work for a publication or are you freelance or? I'm going to take like.
He's a motorcycling influencer.
I did not know that.
I'm going to take 4 minutes out here for Ask Gugu. Bear with me if this bores you, but I just need to know.
Yeah, so I do freelance for a couple of publications. Write for Sunday Times, Motoring, Stewarton.
Because your blurbs are quite good. I noticed this yesterday. So obviously you write.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm a writer. Sunday Times, Stewarton, Driven Magazine.
Okay.
Don't know if you've heard of it.
No.
Next time you fly, Slow Lounge, check it out. And Black Magazine, BLAQUE. Pumi, heard of it?
Yes.
Also know BC. We know Mono BC.
Oh, you know him.
Yes. Everyone knows BC.
So I write for him as well. I do motoring for him as well. I'm the motoring editor for that publication.
What's your favorite car?
George, dude. So many.
Just one.
The dream. what I want to own and keep.
Top.
The previous generation C63 AMG Coupe.
Oh,
like
very nice.
I want to own that and keep it.
I saw the...
Is that because of the sound, or do you think the car is that good?
It is the sound, but also that's the car that made my dreams come alive back when it was first launched, like many years ago. Mm-hmm. Like over a decade ago, I think.
Yeah, and when it was launched, I did a track day with it. So
yeah.
Track day and skid pan.
Is it?
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
It's a beast of a car.
Sideways so easily.
Invigorating.
Yeah, so I want to own that. Yeah, that's top of the list for me. I mean, I've driven all kinds of cars, supercars and everything else, but...
Supercars? Which supercar?
The last one was the Aston Martin DBS Superleggera.
Actually behind the wheel.
Yeah,
oh, dude, man. That's like my dream. Go to Kailami and take like a Ferrari out or something.
5.7 litre VTOL, bro. That was insane.
And your insurance cover that?
Well, I mean, I'm a journalist, so they cover that. They give me the car. I drive the car.
But don't you feel nervous? So, like, I've driven some cool cars before, and obviously not in the same vein as you have, but I felt so nervous having like really cool cars because like what could happen?
Yeah, so initially I used to. I mean, the first really expensive car I think was like 2 million rand. That was a Maserati. I felt nervous then, but now like you get used to it.
Yeah,
you know?
Even like when you go parking, you know, sort of go to the shops quickly, and then like there's some
douchebag,
dumbass pushing his trolley in an awkward sense.
Ben, you rocked up in a Ferrari convertible once.
Yeah, I felt quite nervous.
It was like a 458. No, not a 458.
It was an older one. It was a 360 Spider.
Yeah.
Yes, it was nice. No, I remember that.
No, but I drove some more expensive cars than that, but I always felt like a little bit nervous.
No, but I think my thing about it is that I don't feel nervous, and I don't allow myself to get nervous because I feel like that's when you make mistakes, when you're nervous. And you don't want to make mistakes with that kind of car.
That's pretty smart.
But surely these cars handle like really well on the road, like grip like there's no tomorrow.
The Aston, dude, the speed I did in that car is unmentioned. I mean,
that's not what you mentioned.
Yeah.
Young merchant journalist fired from
Eclipse.
And Pubi, your sort of...
You don't know that some of those things, like South Africans, eh?
Second?
It's illegal. You can't just talk about.
Yeah, you can't just speak on. I mean, like, we'll do it on the track. On the track, you can run as fast as you want.
I know, but that's exactly what you just said. You just said I did unmentionable speeds on the track.
Yeah.
Sorry, sometimes you mumble, Google. You've got to get it all out. And probably you. So, what's your primary life outside of your appearances here? Again, like I forget it because I haven't been here for some time.
Marapen. What is my primary life?
What, is that a bad question?
I'm a working mom.
I actually don't know either for me. We spend so much time here
together. I'm a working mom.
Now it's Ask for Me for 3 minutes.
Yeah,
Is this Ask for Me? I do comms, communications,
yes.
Stakeholder engagement.
Stakeholder engagement.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. That's very top level. I think that went over my head. I'd like to take
a guess at trying to analyze. Stakeholder investment. So
not investment, engagement.
Engagement, stakeholder engagement. So
lost in the first subject.
So put me, you the middle between the execs at the company and their stakeholders and the message the execs get across to their stakeholders. Am I right? Or am I totally wrong?
You're almost
because,
right.
I mean, these guys aren't good at communication. All they know is numbers and spreadsheets, and you need to turn those numbers and spreadsheets into basically verbal data. That's understandable.
In a lot of ways. In a lot of ways. What we do is, you know, most companies have their workers, and it's easy to talk to their workers. And then they have their customers, and it's kind of easy to talk to their customers because everybody does that. But then they also have communities where they work. Like I work with a lot of mining companies, lots of government type business, and they have to deal. And communities are a totally different thing because they're not necessarily interested in the product that you're making. They're not necessarily interested in the money that you're making. They're interested in the way that you impact their lives.
Like your CSI initiatives and that.
Yeah, so not even CSI. I mean, I've worked in places like Marikana. I've worked in places, in far places, crazy places, where companies have serious challenges with the communities where they are based. It's a hectic thing.
And then you go home, and then you got a full-time mommet as well, basically.
Yeah, first you full-time mommet before you leave home.
Well, exactly, yeah. So that's
before I came here, I was already full-time momming.
And who's the more difficult stakeholder?
Depends. The one who doesn't even have a stake.
I've been doing some interesting sort of corporate work recently. There was this women's event, this company, and we spoke about various issues, and I was basically just showcasing the event. Obviously, I'm not being a woman. I wasn't an active member of the thing, but I was capturing it for video and podcast purposes. And it was quite interesting. This one woman was talking about how in life you've always got your stakeholders. You've got your ones that are in a boardroom, and then you've got your ones that are at home. Like, you got to have this work-life integration. It's not this balance anymore where you go, well, if I can work hard, then I can do this. Like, no, you got to integrate every single day. So you can't just, like, throw one to the side and then just have, like, two at the end like a token.
Yeah.
Because life catches up, and then suddenly you can't do that. Now you've got this like 6 day, 1 day split.
Mm.
So it's
and weekends. So like the things like email and the fact that everything's on your phone now.
Yeah.
It's made the work day almost 24 hours. So your work day is in the middle of your life day. I know, it's terrible.
So I used to have that problem as well, where I had my emails on my phone and I would constantly refresh my emails. I felt like I was online 24/7. I deleted my emails off my phone. Anything that connected my phone and like my 24-hour life to work, I deleted. Everything was on the laptop. When the laptop opened, that is when I was in work mode. And when the laptop closed, I was not in work mode. And I started enjoying life and taking things in. A lot better.
And what is that like, Flax? Because I haven't seen you in like 4 years.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while.
A long time, but like you haven't really aged.
It's been a roller coaster and a half. I know. I'm going on that like Benjamin Button thing where you do reverse aging.
No, you're doing well. You're obviously looking after yourself. I mean, there were times that you're on the show where that wasn't the case.
I know.
You were drinking and staying out late and all that kind of stuff. So So what's your whole primary thing now? And are you happy?
Jeez, I've joined the 27 Club. The 27 Club is a dirty age. When you're like 26, you're not...
You're older than Gugu.
Oh, Flax. Oh, Ben, you just had to go there.
No, it's weird. Like, you're not the youngest person in the studio anymore.
I'm mad.
27 Club.
So
what's it feel like?
How old are you now?
26.
Okay, so 26 is like when you go to the airport and you have the option of walking on that thing where you just stand and it takes you places.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
27 is when you actually have to get off and you have to choose start the walking. Direction you want and you actually have to start putting in effort in life. This week I researched car insurance.
I love the way it describes it. You hear
that? Wait a minute. Like, what? Only now you're beginning to make those kinds of decisions? What have you been doing
I feel like I've been walking.
He's been preparing himself for the decisions. Probably it's a process.
Jeez,
I've been on that escalator part at the airport, and now I've had to actually step off and realize what car insurance is, how companies operate, and CRPC of registration.
For your own car. Are you paying for that?
What does that mean? Have you had no, like... car insurance till now?
No, I've been under my parents' name until now.
Shit, boy.
And obviously it was low because they've had car insurance for a while. Now I've just realized that your car insurance goes down after time. So now I'm hit with high premiums that are going to go down and I'll only benefit from lower premiums in like 4 years. Well, hoping that I'm claim free.
If you go well, yeah. It's going to be a pretty 4 charmed years to get you to that position.
Wait, are you paying for that car, Flax?
Yeah. Okay. I'm very excited. So I've like saved up for this car for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I was very focused on this car.
Yeah.
It's a Suzuki Jimny. I'm obsessed with this car.
No, you're not driving a Jimny right now.
No. This car goes in on Thursday.
Yeah.
So I go and collect it. I've got this new philosophy on life.
Uh-huh.
That
it's all 27 years of you.
Yeah,
There's two ways you need There's two ways you need to live life.
Right.
You need to live life in reverse. You need to look forward, but look back at the same time. So you need to act like you're 60 years old looking back with these regrets that you don't want when you're 60. So you need to start doing those things now. And you also need at the same time live as if you're going to die as soon as you leave the studio or something like that. So you need to wake up every day and say, this is the day I die, and what am I going to do today that's actually meaningful? Mindfulness and meaningfulness actually came into play when you hit the 27 Club as well. Mm. You no longer want things that don't have meaning. You don't want like inanimate objects. If it doesn't have meaning, you don't want it anymore.
Right.
If your job doesn't have meaning, you don't want that. Even my clothes stopped having meaning. So I started making my own clothes. So those clothes would have meaning.
You
and I put
making your own clothes. Are you actually serious?
Oh, let's do that. Wait, let's do that. I've got to read that out.
Just plain shirts with cool sayings.
If you think you're too small to make a difference, imagine a mosquito in your room.
Is that not cooler than some random Gucci shirt that you'll go buy in the store?
You made that.
Yeah, and I even started like branding it with like an MF at the back. And it's much cheaper than any shirt you'll buy in a store. And it's simple. And I prefer to wear this instead of some random fashion designer's thing they decided our market would enjoy.
That's a hell of an interesting character, Michael.
You're blowing Pumi's mind right now.
Oh, it's the 27 Club.
You know what I'm so excited about? That this is on the internet. 5 years from now, we're going to have this conversation. You're going to look back and you're going to go, my God. was that really me?
The thing was, Flax was always a very inquisitive young chap.
No, he still is. The mind works. You can see that.
Yeah, but now he's
been... overtime.
That's my point. He was always an inquisitive chap, but now he's added application to the inquisitiveness.
Yeah. No, that's actually a good way of putting it. That I had all these sort of ideas and now I've started implementing them into life and actually actioning them and seeing what comes as a result of it. As I turned 27, I was like, I reevaluated life. And like, I resigned from my job last week. I sold the car.
You resigned from your job?
Resigned from the job.
So then what are you going to do now?
I got another job lined up.
Oh, okay. And you sold the car now, the car you're driving right now.
Yeah. Because I want a Jimny that I can go on adventures. I want...
Yeah, it's
I want
a good adventure car.
That's wonderful.
I want like those... You know when people describe, oh, you can have this awesome picture in your house.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you can go on an adventure and see a view that money can't buy.
Yeah.
I want that in life. I don't want to be staying in like fancy hotels. I'm all about hostels. I go and I stay in hostels. Hmm. 300 rand a night a room and you meet the most random people ever. I once met a hacker, and I chatted to this hacker for like 2 hours, and his job was so cool. He didn't have a stationary desk. Basically, his computer was his desk, and he could travel the world, and he just had to log on for like 6 or 7 hours a day, try and hack a system, and then that's his job for the day. He could be anywhere in the world, and... Like, if you think back...
What's he hacking, though? Like,
yeah, and who pays him for that? Is he stealing money?
Is he hacking, like, Rhino trafficking?
No, no.
Or is he just hacking your bank account?
He's hacking, like, some Yahoo system that they created. So, his job is to find flaws in the system before other hackers...
They pay him for that.
Yeah, they pay him for it.
He's like a catch-me-if-you-can...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
And I think they pay him a steady salary, and when he finds a glitch... It's his bonus.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like real specialized work.
But
that's
good.
He's like a one in a million kind of person to be able to do that.
You get to travel the world. He's literally getting paid, and he gets to travel the world, no desk. He's just got to be online remotely.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why more jobs aren't like that. Like, if you're in a call center, why can't you take the calls from anywhere in the world?
Well, it's getting there, but there's a fundamental, probably obviously with your work around stakeholders and people, you can maybe back me up on this. There's a fundamental urge for people to maybe not be as good once they're not under a boss. Now, it's great. Like, technology is an amazing thing, right? Mm. Because especially if you look at overheads around office rentals, desks, having to have a coffee machine, having to have, like, HR in case Google harasses somebody.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, to have this remote desk is great until it's like, okay, so you're getting into some bad habits at home, and then I've actually got to micromanage you. Some people have to micromanage.
Yeah.
Have to be.
So, I know of some companies that have actually created these websites which are virtual offices.
Mm-hmm.
So, what happens is... everyone will have their desk. So Pumi will have a desk. Ben, Gugu will have his desk. And it's all virtual. So we log in to the office online.
Mm-hmm.
I can see if you're at your desk because your office will be open. And that's when I can like Skype chat you or G-chat you or whatever. And it's literally a virtual office. So
you know what's really fascinating about that is that almost everybody, except maybe coders. Maybe coders are different. Mm-hmm. But we like to work... where we can walk up to the next person, where we can problem solve together. That's why offices work. That's, I mean, given the clash up that happened at WeWork, I think they are quite a unique little case. But that's why even entrepreneurs look for co-working spaces, because that's what we yearn for. That's what we want. We want to be able to problem solve together. We want to be able to walk up to the next person and solve a problem in real time.
Yeah.
So, in as much as all of that kind of virtual workspace sounds like it's what everybody wants, you see that that's what people actually go back to, is when they have it all available to them, they still show up to the office more often than not.
But Flex, the point being is that the hacker guy, he's got a special skill, so he can do that. Like, if that's what you want, then you create something where you can do that. Like Pumi's case is quite correct in that we have this desire to communicate with each other as well, and also with problem solving and systems and operations and stuff like that, you have to have interaction. But where I'm trying to get to as well, which I think your mind is, how can I just be a guy with an internet connection? And then that's it.
Yeah, very true.
And that's it. And then, but that's because I don't work in certain categories. Like, I don't like having people around. I'm the exception to creativity. I'm quite happy with me. If I could have...
Solitude, Ben.
Yeah, I kind of like the solitude. This is the most social I'm going to be today. Just looking at you three guys.
Sure.
But it's a great balance, and I think every company, every organization has to know there's a balance between the two. So again, referencing these corporate videos I've been making for this big corporation, some people have to be there. which is great. Some people, they've started families. They don't have to be there all the time. So they're pushing for more flexible work time where they can just be at home. And most of them are even willing to pay for their own fiber / 3G connection, whatever it is, just so they can structure the day as such. And every company has to have that option, I think. But I think obviously it would be impossible for them just to go, right, we're going virtual. I met a guy in Amsterdam who actually runs an advertising agency from his boxes on his couch.
I'm mad.
But the question has to be, at what level can he grow? What level can the agency grow? Because he has to put pants on at some stage and meet some people and actually physically look at some stuff rather than just scanning over emails. Like, but it's a beautiful balance, and it's time that we live in right now where all of these things are possible.
I think like a perfect work environment and scenario for me would be whereby you're paid to do a specific job, but it doesn't matter where you do that job, and it's recommended that you sort of travel and do, like, I don't know what happened with WeWork, but it would sort of be like a WeWork premises, and we just go to different sort of WeWork offices and meet different people and get different ideas. Otherwise, you come into the office and you're getting sort of same ideas, same patterns of thinking from the same people that have been there for years.
I totally agree. What was the whole thing with WeWork? Do you know more about that?
Yeah.
Because, well, I mean,
it was basically a pyramid scheme.
Really?
No.
Everyone was talking about it.
WeWork is this co-working environment. Yeah. It's for entrepreneurs. It's for creative people. It's hot desks. You can come in. They literally opened a WeWork in Rosebank a couple of months ago.
Mm. And it was hyped to be like the Disney World of offices.
But the whole premise and what they were selling. So WeWork is an old company, right? It opened in, I think, 2010. So, and that's when they started. But they build it. Like, everybody currently is going around, like, Uberizing their business.
In that accent.
Absolutely. So annoying. Everybody's got, like, this idea, my business is like the Uber of. So they build it as that, as it's some kind of Uberized office environment, and then it had additional wings to it. So there was an education arm. So people who worked at the WeWork premises could have their kids in a school on a similar premises and a creative environment and all of that. But like most people in Silicon Valley, they do a huge capital raise.
Yeah.
So they raised money. But how they described the company and how they valued the company was some kind of tech-based thing. But that's not what it is. WeWork is actually a property-based business, right?
Yeah.
It's property-based. You've got office spaces, you've got hot desks. And so the valuation of it was sky high. You had this huge capital raise, and then they were going to have an IPO for it.
Oh, man.
And that's when the wheels came off. The wheels came off basically around the founder, one of the co-founders, his wife, who is a ex-actress, her cousin, her brother, and then it's just everybody that's working in the company, the way that they run this company, who is doing what, and what they're using the money for, and all of that kind of crap came crashing down.
So is the company still in operation?
So he, who was the CEO and co-founder of the business, was voted off, and he was one of the people on the executive who voted himself off about 3 weeks ago. And they're reorganizing. They have a Japanese billionaire is one of the founders, so one of the people that are the main shareholders, stakeholders in the business is one of the founders, and so the money's still in there. They're trying to recoup and reorganize the way that the business is structured. They've obviously gotten rid of him, CEO, and his wife, who was also the CEO of the foundation, as well as his cousin, who was the CEO of the schooling or the education part of the business. And they're trying to restructure and reorganize and see if they can still save it.
Matt, it just shows you that trees rot from their roots, eh?
But it also just seemed too good to be true. There was like free beer and like Taco Tuesdays.
Really?
Yeah, it sounded like a vibe. I work at a shared office space, so my company's got a really nice section of a place, Morningside. And it's cool. It makes a lot of sense. Like, it's really nice that you walk around, there's always different people you see every day.
Mm.
But you've still got your office. And then you go downstairs, and there's like this little kind of restaurant-y canteen thing. They've even got this Mexican pop-up restaurant, which they run like Uber Eats from. Really, really smart. This is a side tangent, but if you order from a particular Mexican restaurant, I'm not entirely sure what it is, rather than the Uber Eats guys going to the one structure like in a mall, they've created this little mobile like food truck in our office car park, so that deliveries can be quicker and more frequent.
That's genius.
So they've Uberized the Mexican.
And all I have to do is walk down two flights of stairs, and I can get a chunky chicken burrito, which is actually great and agrees with my bowels. It is such a win. Just looking at the messages here, someone says, I work for a major bank and work full-time from home. It's amazing. I don't want to solve no problem man with no fools. Working in slippers is life. Officers can suck it. I'm forever trapped in this job. Okay?
Wow.
Interesting. I hear what Pumi is saying, and we don't have to do it all for professions. Mm-hmm. I'm a graphic designer and really don't see why I have to go into the office to be disturbed every 2 seconds. So that's another thing. Mm. And then there's like office team building, and then there's
politics, then office
all
politics.
The politics. Ooh, and then the and gossip. Then it's like, and like, I what if you're really attractive and everyone wants to talk to you all the time? And then, you go.
Is that a particular problem you struggle
with?
Put me in
my 20s, I had that problem all the time.
And then you have everyone thinking they have an opinion on your work. So that graphic designer, they probably work at home and actually get their job done to like how they envision it. But if they work in an office, every person that walks past them probably goes, oh, that would look better in red.
Yeah. No,
and this person's like an accountant.
They still have that problem. They still have that problem. They just swear on their own. There's nobody to have that like resting bitch face with.
But it's a great example of how certain channels can do this no problem.
Yeah.
Because also, if you're a designer in an agency, you'll get someone going, oh, can't you just quickly make this like this thing for me? I just need to get like this little tweak, you know, and then I've got this review, and then I was going to show a client this. We said turn it around in like an hour, and you're sitting there going, no. Like, firstly, who are you? Secondly, no. And thirdly, okay, fine. I hate being here. And that's how these things work in agencies. Lots and lots of messages yesterday. I'm sorry again, we didn't get through to them. I'm trying to get through to them more than today. Hey, Ben, Flax, Gugu, and Pumi. It would be great to have a remote office, but it won't work when trying to make good for jellyfish and feed sharks via an internet connection.
Sorry, what?
I think it's like if someone who works in an aquarium worked remotely.
Michelle had to work remotely, then she would really battle to feed the sharks. Because Michelle does that. She literally jumps into the tank with the sharks and she feeds them.
So cool.
Michael Flax, what a guy. He makes me laugh.
You said that. That's nice.
Don't know, Flax. Draw the number.
No.
How's we've got some time. We've got a couple minutes before the five things you need to know, which Gugu has so lovingly put together for me. He's compiled it with love, care, and he's no doubt taken so much time to compile this.
But that's how it's supposed to be, Ben. A link. You hit the link, there's a title, and you go into it.
And then what, do I just plagiarize someone's story?
Yeah, you read it. You read in the news.
Imagine he gave you like five Snapple lids and said, those are the five things you need to know.
Tell you what, Flex, that would have been better than what he's given me now. But hey, who am I to be upset about this kind of stuff?
Be grateful, Ben. For once in your life. Yesterday, you complained about me the whole time.
No, I complained about two things. There was no message screen.
WhatsApp, what's going on with WhatsApp? Do you even know what you're doing? I'm like, dude, I know what I'm doing. I've got you. Connected the whole setup, rigged it up. And what did you have? Audio.
Delayed.
You didn't say thank you.
Delayed service, and I did say thank you.
Okay, well, I don't remember.
Well, after that amazing interlude, let's probably go to the five things that you need to know today.
Do you want to play a little intro song there?
No, so the five things that Gugu believes that you have to see today, have to know, it's, well...
Are you going
to
pin it on me?
It's a team game. It's a team game. Of course, I'm going to pin this on you. You've compiled this for us. Something you really need to know in Gauteng is that there is best way to say this. There's an outbreak of fake dentists going around now.
Oh man,
looking out for you, boy.
Out of all the things that you want in life to be quite sure, it's medicine. It's your health. It's something that's going to maybe give you less pain if you're in pain. And dentists are... I remember back in the 90s, there was actually a horror movie called The Dentist. Mm. And I could not think of anything more absolutely terrifying than a guy with all these sharp implements just going in at your mouth.
And that drill.
And the drill and the injections. Well, there's fake dentists doing the rounds in Gauteng. They've launched these raids. and police have come up with illegal dental practices, mostly in Springs. Okay, well, there we go. The story kind of narrows down a little bit more of, I'm not so surprised.
I once got my rugby boot stolen in Springs when I played a game. It was like, I was devastated as a child.
Probably about the same guys who then opened this dental practice. The bogus dental practitioners are reported to be foreign nationals, said Brigadier Matopelo Peters. So several exhibits, including a fake dental practitioner certificate and equipment used at the surgery, were seized. So obviously they got a bit of a tip-off, acting on what I would hope, a community coming together to smoke out these bogus dentists. The owner of the surgery, suspected to be a foreign national, was not at the scene, and police are still looking for him. So if you're in Springs and there's a guy running around in a white sort of coat, with blood smears in the front and a scalpel on the left or wherever he is, this is a worrying case.
I don't know how you fake professions like that. Like, you have to know at least like two things about it. Like, if you're going to start handling a drill and a scalpel near someone's teeth, you actually have to know like even the smallest amount of things.
But you do.
Like Flex's point, it's quite tough to bullshit dentistry. Yeah. Like, you can be a doctor and say, I'm going to write you a script, and then you write a whole bunch of shit in a piece of paper.
Or maybe your father was a dentist, and you picked up a thing or two from him, and then you're just running the family business in Springs. You're a dentist as well.
I wonder if you could learn to be a dentist from YouTube. Imagine you sat
Of course you can.
Like, maybe like 40 hours on YouTube, and you now know how to do a root canal.
Look, of course you can. And if you watch enough episodes of like some kind of Grey's Anatomy or something, or House, you know, you can become pretty good
work
at
your way around it.
Because think about it, so even when you go to the dentist, how often are you having anything major done? It's like a little bit of teeth cleaning, it's not
this and that here and there.
It's nothing, the major stuff. How many people do you think that guy sees that he's had to do like a root canal or reattach or... No, you're cleaning teeth. That's not, you know, come on.
I have a little confession.
You just need a steady hand.
I went to go see the dentist, I think 2 weeks ago. And it's someone I know. Someone I've known. I know she's a dentist, qualified. And she said, hey, pull through, you know. And I went there and I realized that I've got a fear, like a hectic fear for dentists. Like, I was literally shaking, and it's like, I know this person, and I know they're not going to hurt me, but I'm just so scared of what's going to happen in my mouth. And literally, she just cleaned me up, filled a tooth or two up, and literally, that was it.
But it is rough, and it's like the fact that you got the spotlight in your face and you're lying down.
Yeah, and you don't know what they're going
to
do.
But just to Flex's point, here's one search on YouTube.
Saved is with a procedure called root canal treatment, also known as endodontic treatment.
We're going to do an endodontic treatment.
Endodontics is a specialized area of dentistry focused on treating disease. Under the white enamel is a hard tissue called dentin.
This is all just biology. Where's the part where we learn how to do this? Trying to make a living in Springs, damn it.
Where's the drill? There you go.
An opening is made through the crown of the tooth and into the pulp chamber. Fluid is put in the canals to kill any bacteria
and
help rinse out debris. In most cases, a temporary filling is placed to close the opening until you see your dentist.
And the guy in Springs was just putting Tic Tacs in there.
After your endodontist is finished, you must return to your dentist to have your tooth properly restored with a filling or crown. That's,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's like,
looks difficult
like
to
DIY.
Me.
DIY, man.
But it's about getting the tools. So obviously in Springs, he was going probably to the hardware store.
Cement,
and he was getting like
filler.
Cement filler. That's
I used to like bounce between dentists. I used to tell my dentist, no, I'm not loyal to dentists. And I used to go to like three or four dentists a year until I realized what I was actually doing. If the one said I had a problem, I'd go to the next one and the next one until one of them said I don't have a problem and just cleaned my teeth.
Facts.
Didn't work in my favor.
And that was probably the fake dentist.
Yeah. I ended up in Springs on a Tuesday.
Yeah, looking for rugby boots and you
but
got a root canal.
The thing about it is also, this guy must have been good, right? Because how do you find a doctor or a dentist? You ask your friends.
Yeah.
Right?
And medical aid.
Who do you use? You know what I'm saying? He must have
been good. It's interesting how it happened, actually. I don't know. Ben, you got more info?
No, Gregor, it's the five things you need to know. We need to go into the other four that you've heard.
This one can't is directly linked to the fake dentist.
Can't keep plugging away, but we'll stay in the health sector just for you, Gugu. Mm-hmm. And why there's a shortage of doctors and nurses in SA. So Health Minister Dr. Zweli Mkhize says the demand for health services in SA is increasing and funds to address the change are limited, mainly due to the continuous rise of immigration and the increasing burden of disease. That sounds like a perfect storm of what we don't want in this country, isn't it?
What diseases?
Like, I've heard of no epidemics that have, like, taken out people in Johannesburg recently.
Well, I mean, look, I think cancer's still a big deal. AIDS is still a big deal.
We're not talking, like, those new diseases, no, right? Like Black Plague or something.
No, we're not talking about just, like,
Black
these kind of...
Black Plague's not new. Black
no, I'm saying that's now, like, announced, oh, my God, there's
it'll
a Black Plague
to
out.
If it hits them. Yeah, so it's probably,
what,
I would
like
say...
like Ebola?
Yeah, there hasn't been, like, mad outbreaks of Ebola in Johannesburg
yet.
Or anything.
No, thankfully not yet. So Mkhize's remarks are in response to parliamentary questions from Freedom... Front Plus MP Philippoulos van Staden, who asked him what the reasons were for the shortage of doctors and nurses in SA state hospitals. So this is his actual response. The primary reasons why the Republic of SA has a shortage of doctors and nurses is the fact that the public health sector budget has not been increased in real terms in the past 10 years, impacting the number of staff that can be appointed. Furthermore, the demand for health services in this country is increasing, while there is no additional funding to address the change, which results primarily from immigration and the increasing burden of disease. I really don't see... I mean, this is a huge, huge problem. I mean, I know this country has many. There's like a mind map somewhere that people are putting together all this country's problems. But this is a biggie. And, you know, okay, so the services are getting smaller. The demand is getting higher. Mm. You don't need to be at all intelligent. I mean, you don't even have to be a dentist in Springs to work out. This is a massive problem. And, sure, to see if there's an end in sight with this one.
So I did a project a couple of years ago for Gauteng Treasury, and one of the things that they had flagged, which is a big problem and why the shortages happen, is because it's difficult to plan with people moving all the time,
yeah.
Right? So we've got a huge kind of influx of people that come into Gauteng from all over the SADC region and also from the rest of the country.
Sure.
So the census... the last one of which we had in 2011 or something like that, is supposed to help the government plan. Mm. Say, this is the number of people that reside in this area, and this is kind of the projection given, right?
Yeah.
But because of all of this unplanned for kind of migration of people, it's difficult to actually say, in 2 years' time, we're going to need this number of doctors in these hospitals. And but what we also have here, we spoke to the MEC, then MEC of Health. They said what we also have in Gauteng is we also have a lot of people who travel to Gauteng simply to go to the hospital.
All right.
So people who come from rural areas.
Oh, so that's where some of the influx comes from.
Yeah, so people who come from rural areas wanting to go to a big hospital in the big city.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's not even just decent hospital. Mm. It's about the mentality that says, actually, in the big cities, they have stuff that is better than what we have here. Mm. So they don't go to their local service providers. They want to go to a big city.
Well, exactly. For me, would you go to the dentist in Johannesburg or would you go in Springs? which would you choose? So it proves your point perfectly. I mean, this is the thing. It's like people are in flux in all kinds of ways. That's human nature. But then you've actually got, like, literally, like, for a service, you're willing to take the trip.
Except when I'm going to the airport, I do not go east of Rosebank. I would never have my mouth open in the chain springs.
That is... Well, you should never go east of Rosebank, get your mouth open for anything, really. I mean, the air pollution is a lot worse out there. Let's be honest. The more east you go, it's not great.
Is that true?
Yes.
Why?
Have you seen the coal belt of Mpumalanga? I mean, orcs wouldn't even go out there. And that's how bad it is with how we create our burn our fossil fuels and stuff.
Oh, mad.
Yeah, so bit of a downer medical-wise from this morning. But there's been a cop arrested for allegedly drunk driving after crashing police BMW in high-speed chases. Interesting story. So when I was driving on Saturday, I got onto the freeway, and on the off-ramp there was a brand-new BMW 3 Series.
That's what they're driving these days, eh?
What a cool car. Yeah. Like, I get it, because these guys are doing important work. Mm. They need good cars. The BMW 3 Series is traditionally... it's your benchmark luxury sedan. Mm. Obviously, you've got a decent amount of pace. But at some stage, some guy's going to abuse the privilege, right? Mm.
The thing's got a turbo.
I think they're doing well right now. I mean, you said you spotted them on the highway, and I spot them almost every day on the highway, which is visibility, which is patrol, and all that stuff. That's pretty cool in terms of them actually doing their job, you know, and having a visible presence.
A Cape Town police officer in a police BMW was arrested on Sunday for allegedly driving under the influence following a high-speed chase with traffic police. Yo, that's not a good look, huh?
Wait, the police were chasing the police?
Yes. So one of those arrested was a police officer. Okay, so
being chased.
The guy, who took officers attached to the Ghost Squad on a wild chase through Khayelitsha into Esterlivia at approximately 5:20 Sunday morning. So maybe he was out puzzering so hard on the Saturday. Mm. And so they got him.
But bastard.
That's quite a sight, huh? To serve, protect, and all those kind of things, and then it's just to dice on a Sunday morning.
That's so hectic.
Gugu, is that three things or four things there?
That is so far. That's three so far.
We had the dentist.
Then I trusted you in terms of counting ability. Come on now.
Yeah.
Imagine being the PR
lady. He's
not here
for his counting ability.
The PR lady to handle that story whereby the police are chasing the police that are drunk driving.
Well, Michael, not every woman, not every person in PR is a woman. Sexist.
Wait, did I say woman?
Yeah.
Oh.
Derogatory slur right there.
My bad.
Let's move straight on. So a couple in Australia got the shock of their lives, when they gave birth, well, obviously not they, she gave birth to a 6-kilogram baby girl. 6 kilograms. It looks like that kid might have eaten the twin. Yesterday we had a story, Pumi, where...
It's a grown man, Ben.
Yesterday we had a story where a kid got born with three legs, a kid was born with three legs, two penises, and zero anus. And here we have a 6-kilogram whopper coming out.
How big are babies usually?
About 3.5.
Around there.
Three.
So yesterday was Ganeho's birthday.
Your son?
Yes.
How old?
12.
Ah, cute. Yeah.
But when he was born at Park Lane, the day after he was born, so today technically, there was a baby who was 7 kilograms.
Seven kilograms.
Where does that even come out from?
Please.
No, seriously.
Where?
7 kilograms.
Do you know about something called a caesarean?
I've heard of it. You want to tell me more?
It's existed since the time of Julius Caesar. It's like that old.
Isn't that because it's like...
Wait. For bigger babies...
Was Julius the first guy to deliver the caesarean? Well, I'm tired of nation building and just, you know, capitalizing on small countries. I'm going to give birth
Julius
with a big knife.
Caesar, the inventor of the Caesar salad as well.
It looks like you're going to have a huge baby. Let me give you a caesarean.
So, but that was something to behold.
I don't mean this to sound like a crass question, but how do you bounce back from a 7-kilogram child? I mean, like, was the woman of big structure herself?
No, actually.
It all depends how, like, the baby's positioned in the stomach. Like, it could literally be positioned in a way that doesn't show that it's such a big baby inside, if that makes sense. Like, you know how they say it could be showing in the bum or...
No, I don't think so.
That baby is about twice the size of a normal baby.
Do you see the picture of... This child is gigantic, this big bundle of joy in Australia. Mum gives birth to, this is the headline.
Mini sumo wrestler.
Mini sumo wrestler.
That's so harsh.
The healthy baby called Remy was delivered in the Wollongong Hospital.
Healthy, hey? Healthy child.
Well, I think they've got to say that. It's like one of those things. You can't say it's cute.
There are lots of other things that make a person healthy, guys. Stop body shaming the baby.
Body shaming the baby. Probably fair enough. I will take full responsibility for that. Wow. She was... Wow. I'm looking at pictures.
And look at that mom. So look at this mom.
In my years of living, I've helped...
All 27 of them.
All 27 years, I've helped deliver two babies. And it's one of the smelliest sort of... You can't control anything.
What kind of smell is it? Describe it.
I don't even know what words to use.
Yeah.
The different smells hit you at different times because the woman has zero control.
I never thought that the title for this podcast would be The Smells of Pregnancy by Dr. Flax.
I mean, it's very like in I wouldn't say
just a little bit large for the other babies in the nursery.
No, man, Ben.
Remy Francis Miller clocked 5.88 kilos at birth. In the old language, that's almost 13 pounds compared to the average weight, which is 3.3 kilos.
There we go, 3.3.
Doctors everywhere, quick, grab the scales, put her on, let's see how big she is. They're blown away, eh? It's crazy.
Baby Remy's brother and sister can't believe their luck, and I'm all of a sudden just a little bit more nervous.
I was just thinking it's very cruel to give you that story when you're... Yeah, it's too late now, Jane.
Wow. God,
but what a cutie.
For me, they went with healthy because that woman is lying by saying cutie. I mean, seriously, that is a little cute. I'm not gonna fat shame the kid, but wow, there's a lot going on there. And the final story.
No, Ben, we can't just move on like that. Flax was still telling a story. You can't just cut him off.
Wait, that's the fourth story. There's one more.
Yeah, you were still telling us about childbirth.
No, he was telling us about the smells of pregnancy.
No, man. Yeah.
Sure, you guys can have this after the show. This conversation.
It's very like uplifting. Yeah. Watching a child being born and bringing
babies with these.
So I used to work in an ambulance, This was out of my like 3 years working on the ambulance. There was only two occasions ever where we arrived at scene and the lady was so far into labor that the baby had to be born there. And it's not such like a big process. Like you taught what to do and sort of things sort of happen naturally. Mm. It's just a lot of mess. And then once you rub in the stomach to get the placenta out, then you need to bag the placenta and... It's a lot of things that you don't want to be doing on a Tuesday.
Sure. Heavy. A lot of things I don't want to be hearing on a Tuesday, but thankfully Dr. Robin...
It's early in the morning.
No, that's interesting stuff, though.
It was. Thank you, Flax. But thankfully Dr. Robin, an actual doctor, is on hand to say average baby weight is between 2.8 and 3.8 kilograms. The first Caesar was not performed on Julius Caesar's mother. That's an urban legend. Also, that mom would have been huge. Put me to your story about the 7-kilogram baby. And that mom likely had just
high blood pressure,
gestational diabetes.
Yeah.
Wow.
She did. She did have.
How about diabetes. That? To have an actual doctor to make this qualify this conversation.
You should have
like a doctor fact check and like add to every medical story.
She always does.
Dr. Robin.
She does say that.
No, she's
good.
Amazing.
She's good.
A final story because we need five. We need five stories. Hey, Google.
I gave you five. Ben.
I know. Here it is.
Which one?
The other one was crap. That's why I just shoehorned in the baby.
Yeah, you threw in the baby one. That wasn't my story, guys. By the way, that was Ben's story.
I'm gonna catch you guessing. But Cape Town is nudging towards its maximum advisable level of water use after consumption has increased to 644 million litres per day. Now, back in 2015, before obviously the big droughts and all those kind of things, the water usage was 1.2 billion litres per day. So they've managed
before
to harvest.
Before the big drought had the manufactured outrage around day zero, which was attributed to a company, a PR company that is linked to...
The Guptas.
Drum roll, please.
Good guess. I'm all ears.
Was I right?
No.
Oh.
Tony Leon.
Tony in the Shadows Leon? Leon?
What? Oak in England.
No, he was like the old DP Leon.
Wrong Tony.
Well, he might be.
Tony Blair, England.
Okay.
Tony Leon. DA.
Can we edit that out of the podcast, Google,
no,
please?
Of course. No.
No worries, Max. I don't know if that's the fifth thing we need to know or if that's a conversation for the next hour, but great addition there. After an extended period... After an extended period when Cape Town as a whole was exceeding our water savings target, we are now approaching the maximum advisable level of water consumption. So these are the things that we need to know about. We've got to be precious about our water. I know even here in Johannesburg, if you look outside, it hasn't rained. And I think the Vaal Dam's at like 50. And
we have water restrictions.
Water restrictions are currently in play because they've turned Lesotho off. There's a big switch in Lesotho, and you turn it off and the water doesn't come from there. So it's going to be for 2 months now. Okay, so that's kind of what we're going through right now.
So if you are interested to know about Day Zero, the Cape Town Day Zero. And
Day Tony.
What it was all about. It was actually in the Daily Maverick on the 14th of March 2018. There's a whole story about...
About the whole thing.
But probably all the dams were dry. They were so dry. Anyway, I mean, we need to get into sport.
Of course,
Ben,
you want to talk
sport.
About sports.
Okay, anyway.
That's what I'm here for. I'm not here to talk about cesareans, Julius Caesar's mom. So, yes, we shall talk about some sport, because yesterday was a return to sport here on the Gareth Cliff Show after I left and no one gave a toss about it. Speaking of tosses, cricket. Cricket South Africa are trying to be very united at the moment around the fact that this is an exciting time for SA cricket. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that it's men against boys and we're getting completely trousered in India right now, and shall do on the third test as well. You don't want to kick anything when it's down, right? Cricket South Africa right now is down.
That's going to be headlines tomorrow, eh?
Well, I mean, like, what's the saying? Kick a dog when it's down.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't want to refer to animals towards anybody right now, because I love cricket. Uh-huh. And I want Cricket South Africa to thrive. I want the Proteas to be amazing. I want all these things to happen. That is my African dream. But it's just not working, because the talent's not coming through, because the domestic system is not good enough. We spoke about this yesterday. And the CEO has now said, we've got to be patient, which is a fair comment. It's a fair comment, because being irate is just not going to help anybody. But there needs to be some big structural changes, I think. And it's just worrying that a lot of good players are obviously leaving through the coal packs. All the up-and-coming talent, of which there is much, and this is what pisses me off the most about SA sport, is it's not a lack of talent. You go across the country, you will find absolute gems. I've worked with some sport and development organizations, and the talent's there. It's all there. We've got more on tap than anyone else, I believe. But it's how we nurture it, how we develop it, and most importantly, how we get into competitive structures. So there's one thing about being talented, but Flax, as you would know from your shirt, with your mosquito in a big room, anyone can be, the other side of that, a big fish in a small pond. So if our domestic structures are very small ponds and everyone feels they're a big fish, then we go to India and get beaten by an innings 179 runs, helps nobody. So we've got to make sure that our ponds, maybe put this on a shirt of yours as well, our ponds are in relation to our talent.
Sounds like our problem is our coaches, as well as the guys that handle getting them into the big leagues and the good games, or am I totally off page?
No, it's a fair point. Like, I don't want to get too much into this, because I don't want it to be like a ranting session around how SA cricket's going backwards. But another thing we need to do is, it really is, develop coaches, put a lot of investment into coaches as well, because we all love Rabada running in with the ball. We all love Dean Elgar batting and, like, you know, all our players doing well, but where the coach is coming from. We need to make coaching aspirational for kids, because it's a great job, it's good money, and we need good coaches. Whether they're ex-players that get fast-tracked in systems, or we have a better system towards developing talents in coaching.
That's so true, because like at school, you'll learn soccer, you'll learn about the positions, goalie, midfielder. No one's going to train you to be a ref. No one's going to train you to be a coach at school.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and the level of coaching, I mean, in Bishops...
Okay. Oh, I heard about that story yesterday.
What happened?
We spoke about it at Bishop's, Nick Mallett's niece.
Oh, that story. Yeah.
If you haven't received everything on WhatsApp by now, then you just have no friends.
Did you also get it?
Flax, the world has got all those pictures, videos. But yeah, there's been all kinds of allegations. Whenever anything happens, and obviously we've seen that now with Anele, which we got into yesterday as well, anything breaks the social media, there is a wave of outrage, memes, jokes, worse jokes, and then being shared, like because I have a variety of people from different circles, I get shared everything throughout the day. So I'll get something like 7 times.
Sure.
And it's just over and over. Anyway, sorry that this coaching discussion took such a turn. Ibn Estebeth has shared his side of the story to that Langebaan fracas. Let me use
fracas. Is that the word you're using?
What does that word mean?
Well, Flax, we've got stories, but we don't have a lot of evidence. We've got allegations, but we haven't got a lot of proof. Now, there's all these things being run around, and okay, let's just quickly look at Ibn Etzebeth, right? He is 27 years old. He is...
Like you.
He's played, he's played 82 times for the Springboks. He's a national figure. He has been in the Springbok setup for 7 years, around there. The guy's got a lot of responsibilities. There's a lot at stake in his life. He's been very well media trained. you know, when you ever meet these professional sports stars, people say, oh, they're so boring. Why aren't they entertaining? It's like, well, they've got careers to look after, right?
So they're not entertainers. They're sports people.
Exactly. And sports people in this country, unfortunately, don't have just the responsibility of playing sport. They have responsibility of being nation builders, ambassadors, all these really difficult things that you have to do if you're an adult because they get seen in a certain light and they can't step out of things. So Ibn Elisabeth, his story is that he was in Langebaan with friends and family, and he basically went into a bar, and the bar had a no hat policy. So he took his hat off, and then a few hours later, just instinctively, he had his hat, he put his hat back on, and this guy came up to him and rather aggressively told him to take his hat off. To which he said, okay, sorry, I forgot about it. You have to be so aggressive. Now, the whole point of this Ibn Elisabeth story, it is a racial story, right? It's a big racial story because the SA Human Rights Commission have basically already sentenced Ibn Elisabeth to death, if you believe the town hall messages they're sending out. So the guy who confronted Ibn was a white guy. So he said that they then had a chat. There was no hard feelings. He took his hat off. That was the end of it. He then went outside with his girlfriend. This car almost knocked them over. So he basically tapped in the window to say, dude, like, which were you driving?
Yeah.
And then there was some people, obviously, like, the gathering around them. I mean, Ibn 6'8" or whatever. You can't miss the dude, okay? You can't miss the dude. And anywhere in the world, you'll get people who will target celebrities because they want to get a reaction out of them and they want to cause shit. World over. This isn't a black, white, colored, Indian. It's a world over dickhead thing, okay? And unfortunately, when people drink and it's late at night, you get a lot of dickheads. It's the natural environment of a dickhead. So Ibn then just decided, like, it's time to kind of go. So he got in the car. Someone threw a glass bottle at the car as he got out to see what it was. The people were gathering, and then a sort of fight ensued where his brother, I think, and his cousins and the people around him were... they were engaging with these people. So Ibn, he went to go, this is all the story that he has released. He then went to go protect his brother to get him back in the car and get out of there. Just think, this guy is about to go to the Rugby World Cup, biggest moment of his career. Does he need to be bar fighting?
Nah.
Does he ever need to be bar fighting?
He's huge. He knows he can win a fight.
Of course he can, but why would he ever want to do it? Because that would jeopardize his career, all his endorsements, his future contracts in France or England, wherever he'll
go. What if he's angry then? People get angry.
Yeah, but these guys are very well trained, Guru. They really are. Back in the 90s, you would get rugby players, Bluximing Oaks and like bush pubs. You don't get that anymore because there's so much. There's so much at stake here for me. Like, think about it. You're going to be making, I don't know, 10 million rand a year. You punch one duist in the face, you can jeopardize that with one punch. Now, you've got to have some serious anger issues if you're willing to jeopardize that much financial worth in your life. So Ibn then got everyone back in the car, and in his story, he drove off. So there was no gun. Why would a guy in Ibn Elisabeth's position be having a gun, brandishing it in public, and engaging in violence like this? Obviously, then became a racial issue, but none of his story matches up. So you've got his story, which is that. And then you've got the head of the... there was a video, but I'm not going to play it now. I don't think it needs the credence that people are giving it. But the South African Human Rights Commission has basically said that this guy has no right to be singing the anthem. He should be in prison. So where do we get the leap where, as a South African citizen, you have a right to a fair trial, you have the right to be heard and your story to be acknowledged? You've got people with absolutely no proof. Sure, a fight broke out. Fights break out every single night in this country, especially around taverns, shebeens, bars, restaurants, wherever. So yes, some guys got beaten up, and that's a horrible thing. But there's no proof linking it to Ibn Elisabeth. There's a lot of hearsay. There's no evidence.
What's the video show?
Yeah, but what's the other side of the story as well? That's what I wanted to ask.
That was... So there's four guys, basically. They now call themselves the Langebaan Four. They want R1 million from Ibn Elisabeth. They claim that he hit them with a gun, that he racially abused them, verbally abused them.
Yeah. Was that the Hottentots?
Yeah. So that's what they claimed. Yeah, I mean, look.
Yeah, but there's always two sides to a story, Ben. Of course, I mean, I understand what you're saying about what he's got to lose and all that and all that, but people are human. People are people.
Google, I'm not, trust me, I think humans are mostly shit at the best of times. But when you got no proof to put someone on trial like this, just think, if there's an entire group of 20 people and there's trouble, one of those people is a celebrity. Who's going to get blamed for what happens?
Yeah.
Celebrity, because, I mean, this is always about law, right? You're not going to be guilty by association. It's like, Ibn's got three friends that like to fight people, so Ibn must go to jail. Does that sound right?
And he's a big... dude.
But he's a huge dude. But
this is Michael's only thing.
No, because I once met him in a club and I was even too scared to go say how's it. Because this oak towers. He literally touches the ceiling. He's huge. He's literally huge.
He is massive. And I can also tell you this, after having physically interviewed the dude, he is a lot more put together and smart than people give him credit for. And again, you got to look at this. There is so much at stake in his life. I'm not taking sides here. Just that out of the lack of evidence suggesting the Langebaan 4 story is true, then you got another guy who, like I just pointed out in this section here. I mean, it's like all these calls. He must come back from the World Cup. He must be in jail. We've got to stop indulging all this kind of crap. Fair trial, fair talking points. Let's make it happen.
All agreed on that point. Yeah.
But Eben has actually now he's taking this up. I think he's going to take them to court. I mean, it's a massive defamation suit as well.
Who is he dating? I was just wondering who he's dating.
We'll tackle that in the second hour. Yeah,
do that, Flax.
Yes,
hold that thought.
Yes, Pumi.
Speaking of well-put-together sports people, and we don't see a lot of that, because at the time when they're being interviewed, it's after a game, it's after a match, it's, you know, you're
every good time, they're huffing and puffing.
Adrenaline is still pumping, and so it's hard to kind of, or you and excited, or disappointed, and so we hardly ever get to have a full interaction of, and a view of who the person is, and what their capacity is. I was at an event on Friday, and Caster Semenya was one of the panelists. And I was blown away. She's only 28, Michael.
So she's similar, going through what I'm going through.
But it's a consistent sentiment that I always hear about her.
Jeez.
And you often see it, though, sometimes when they interview her about all the things that she doesn't want to talk about in her career and how composed she is. That is an amazing
28 years old and 1,000 megawatts of magic. She is totally magical and so mature. It was unbelievable. I hardly ever get starstruck. She is totally up there.
But you know, put me at the same time to use Carson as an example, Eben, and just talking about Eben, is that guy didn't really have a time to be young, reckless, and a kid. You know, it's Carson, she's had to mature so
it's
quickly.
It's been 10 years. She's been in the spotlight for 10 years.
Wow.
She has been bullied.
Yeah.
Extremely for the better part of the past 5 of those 10 years. Mm. And she's just the composure.
It's amazing.
That she has.
It really is. It's
and,
so amazing.
And kind of unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I think, so when you see that, and you see that's, because that's what those guys are. You know, you say they have so many hats. Nation builder, all of that stuff. But what they are also is, they are totally the kind of people that young people look at and think, this person, look at what this person is doing. They are living the life. They are living the best life. This is what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
And when you see them in that element, when you see them in the element of having conversations with people, talking about their experiences, talking about what they've learned and how they've gone through what they've gone through, I, for one, am very glad that she is at least one of the people that young people who want to be in athletics can look up to in this country.
Sure.
Unbelievable.
I totally agree. I think a lot of sports stars have the opportunity. That's why I love sport, because it's a way of connecting with people way better than, say, politicians or actors or rappers or whatever. These people are actually putting in the hard yards, because rappers don't have to be nation builders. Their controversy is often what fuels their fame. Politicians have to be very divisive, because that's what gets voters to be emotional and to follow them and create hate for the opposition. Sports stars have to be this everyone must like me kind of thing. It's hard as hell. And when you see them getting vilified like this with no evidence, it really grates me, because I think Eben gives a lot more for this country than a lot of people out there who are claiming to be holier than thou. And here we have, and like I said, violence is a horrible thing. The Langebaan 4, there's evidence that they were beaten up. By who? Over what? It's cool. Let's see the proof. Vilifying this guy because he's a public figure, which I think is what's happening here, is cruel. It's just senseless. And it's going into this whole cancel culture, which is just dreadful, which is, again, it's a global problem. It's not just SA. So I don't think that we're so special with this. But this whole cancel culture, we can bring this guy down. That's how we get power. It's absolute bullshit. And unfortunately, Gugu, that means that we have no more time for other sport. I'll have to pick up sport again.
Oh man, I'm so sad, Ben.
How Ben, Mara, so you depressed. Got a chance to rant.
Yeah, you got to rant.
You know what? It's just these little things like really piss me off. Like again, like to reference Caster is a different kind of story as well. There's many like that. You know, Steve Carlisi's life. The guy wants to play rugby. Why is he building nations? Why is he doing all these things that politicians can't do? Yet you'll get people who want to bring him down. They want to take. They have an issue that he's got a white wife. They've got issues with him doing something. There's always people having these stupid little issues. And the moment this is why I don't go out after dark. People are dickheads. They want to bring you down, and it's just sad. Anyway, we're going to come back with a whole bunch of messages after this little musical interlude. And today we're going to get a little bit more upbeat. One of my favorite songs at the moment.
Your songs are weird. I'll tell you that.
You're weird. If you missed the first hour, go back. Michael will talk to you about the smells of pregnancy. It's a hell of a thing to go through. I'm being dead serious. Thoughts and prayers with the woman who just gave birth to that 6-kilogram giant child in Australia. I'm sure her life will be very normal.
But you say you don't want to talk about it anymore.
Why must music videos have these stories?
I just don't want to argue about it.
Okay.
I love that.
Listen.
I love music videos that are stories.
I really miss that.
There was a time when music videos
Michael
just
Jackson.
Used to be so like...
Michael Jackson did.
Everything about the music video made MTV...
Okay, I'm going to cut you off right now. Blind History today as well. And How's It China in the next hour.
CliffCentral.com.